things.
Okay. So let me talk about my thing for this week, which is something I was reading about in a book about parenting. It's the concept of flow, F-L-O-W, flow.
I wish it was just F-L-O. Some lady shows up at your
house.
There
was a movie with flow in the title, wasn't there? It was like...
Okay. Sorry, yeah. Malcolm.
Jane and Flo and Fro, the Clover.
Anyway, I did not do too much research on this topic, but I thought we could talk about it. Basically, the concept of flow is those times when you are able to focus on something very intently, and are able to sort of focus with such intensity that you in turn have no self-consciousness. You are able to sort of engage in this thing you're doing wholeheartedly. I could read sort of the main tenets of flow. See if I can find them. All right. There's eight things that you need to experience flow. You have to be engaged in a, number one is you have to be engaged in a doable task, whatever that means.
Check.
Two is, two, you are able to focus. Mm-hmm. Three, you have a clear goal. Four, you receive immediate feedback. Five, you move without worrying. Six, you have a sense of control. Seven, you have a suspended sense of self. And eight, you temporarily lose sense of time. I could say that I have experienced flow. It's been a while, but I feel like it's definitely something I've experienced as a musician, playing drums, especially in sort of more experimental, improvisational kind of music. Mm. I've heard that actually that's an example they give a lot is artists and musicians.
What about masturbation?
What about it, Gabe?
Well, I mean, it seems to all this seems to apply for. I don't want to.
I think that could apply. I mean, yeah.
Shut up! I'm in the flow. Just five more minutes. Leave me alone.
I'm flowing right now.
Oh, has to be deleted.
I should have. Yeah. Luckily, my face is bright red. You can't see it. You only see the top of my head, but I'm blushing.
Yeah. Push your camera down a little bit so we can see the expressions on your face as you're masturbating.
That's terrible. It's actually a real thing. I mean, discussed a lot in with software developers, software really? Community. I don't know if Malcolm sort of doing graphic design, you get into that, but. It's a topic or it's discussed, you know, using the term flow when you start writing code and you lose sense of everything, you're just sort of in that space and suddenly 12 hours passes and you're like, you know, that hasn't happened to me in years, but it has before. I think mostly in class, like when I was taking classes in that subject.
Yeah, and that seems to make sense. Like they talk about it a lot in terms of professionals, and that there's actually a chart that explains how flow works in a sense of like your skill level versus the difficulty of what you're doing. So if you have a high skill level but the difficulty is low, you won't achieve flow. But if the difficulty and skill level kind of match, you.
Yeah,
flow.
I stared at that chart and here is what I think. If you're pretty good at something, but you're not bored by it, you're not so good that you're bored by it, you can hit that flow thing. So if you're bad at something, it's just too hard and you don't get there. But once you're good at something, you're like, yeah, I can do this, and you can get into that flow thing. But then once you're too good and it's like stamping license plate or whatever else, then you can't be there anymore because it's just too tedious.
Yeah, it's easy to get distracted.
So you have to be in that like sweet spot of being good at something but not bored by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of the talk about flow is related to the idea of happiness, and that not that you need flow to be happy, but it is, they have concluded that people who experience flow on a regular basis are generally happier. Mm. So yeah, I mean, I remember flow being a great thing the times that I experienced it. It's hard with children, I have to say, to experience flow because they're crazy and have no ability to focus on anything.
And so, if you're distracted by something and then your kid is strangling themselves in the bathroom and you're like, I have no sense of time or space.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't really want to be in flow when you have to be responsible for people either. Yeah.
I do think I when you mentioned this the other day as something you wanted to talk about, I also thought one thing that struck me lately that's sort of semi-related is that over time, as sort of the internet has become more like, you know, sites are more powerful and they, you know, advertising and stuff has just gotten crazy. You know, sometimes just sort of reading a long, you know, a book or an article or something, you obviously hit a certain space and you're just completely absorbed in it, which actually in some ways feels the same. But now whenever I read online, for example, I'll turn on a news site, you know, like the New York Times or something, and I'll start reading the headline and then this giant video will like descend and shift the whole page down so that what I was reading is no longer there. And I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. And I scroll down so I can see it again. And then like 5 seconds later, it decides I'm not watching the video. So it like re-goes up into the top of the browser and then like everything is moving. And I'm like trying to follow the words around and avoid like all the windows popping up and the things getting grayed out. And I can never get that, like, I'm not trying to change your topic here, but this is the point. Like, I can never get to that point where I'm like comfortably like moving through something. And in some ways, my whole existence, maybe because where I am in, you know, my work or career or whatever, and like the way the internet has evolved, like I no longer feel that flow ever anymore. I'm like constantly distracted after like 5 seconds of doing anything.
Yeah, totally. I know what you mean. Like, in general, the internet is designed to distract you in many ways. So yeah, it's anti-flow for sure. What about you, Gabe? Is there any moments in your day-to-day life where you've experienced flow?
Well, I mean, I have felt it with writing. I haven't been doing much of that recently. But I don't know. Sometimes I get caught up in stuff and time will go by. I've been doing a lot of editing and I'm trying to make this bedroom theater, like sort of punk version of Garrison Keillor. What's that thing called? Prairie Home Companion. Splicing together all these theatrical things into this one mega thing, but also cutting out all the blips and time will go by. But I don't know if I feel like it's in a good way. It's more like that feeling of like, oh, I've been, it's sort of like that mind numbing, like I've been splicing out bits of sound for an hour and then I pop up and I'm like, I feel like someone's been drilling a hole in my skull. I don't know if that's exactly flow.
Yeah, I think there's, yeah, I don't know if that's exactly flow. You're also not really receiving feedback. It's more like, that was sort of an interesting thing to me, like the idea of getting feedback. Like, I understand that in terms of like playing music, especially with other people, they're reacting to what you're doing, mm-hmm. and the sound, whatever you're doing, could be pleasing to your ear, and that's instant feedback.
Yeah.
And I imagine with writing too, you're writing and you hear, you're like, you finish a sentence and you could read it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's a good sentence. And you know, that's feedback.
Yeah. Sometimes well, when I'm writing, I do get it. If it's not like mundane, like I want to, sometimes writing, editing is this really mundane thing where I'm just slightly shifting the sound of a character's voice. And it's not, it's like so irritating, but sometimes it's like, I've got a poem and I'm like caressing it in my hands. And then it's like, and it's like an hour later and the poem slightly changed and it's so satisfying. I'm like, yes, you have changed. But, yeah, it's Adam, I'm intentionally going over the top for you, Adam. That's, but I wanted to talk, I like that whole Adam idea of the engaging with the reading. Cause I sometimes read the New Yorker, I still get it. And there's, I do have this feeling of this active engagement with the material, with writing material that I feel like we're lacking. I also agree with the internet where I will like sort of scan stuff. It's like, I can't read an entire thing on the internet. I like get halfway through and I'm like, and your point is, you know, like, but like with actual printed material, it's like much more leisurely and you feel like you're like meditating and sort of I have this like word bubble going on in my brain, sort of like of thoughts that are coagulating in the muck of their words.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Yeah. I achieve that when I'm sitting on the toilet reading occasionally, but it's very brief moments. Yeah.
2 hours pass.
Flow on the yeah. toilet.
But yeah. Oh, I also used to teach this art, this lesson on 12 things happy people do differently, and they did mention flow in that. But in a trunk, they just sort of mentioned it. Yeah, this not in as depth as you did, but yeah.
I wonder if it's this concept of sort of being hyper-focused and sort of lost in what you're doing, which is a good thing, or which seems like a good thing. I wonder if that, you know, all this stuff you both talked about, oh, this is a quality of happiness, if that's a quality of happiness or the opposite is a quality of unhappiness. Mm-hmm. In other words, constant distraction is... like we're not meant to be in that kind of
yeah.
place
yeah.
where everything's a distraction.
It might be one of those things where 50 or 70 years ago, everyone had flow experiences, you know, on a relatively regular basis. And now, and it wasn't, and it was just, and now we're missing, it's just another thing we're missing in our lives. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And I also wonder is like flow is obviously a good thing for your well-being as an individual, but would it make your partner happy if you were in flow more often? You
know? Well, that's
like I imagine like people like they talk about like Albert Einstein being someone who, when he was working on his theorems and stuff, was you know, in this state of flow. And I imagine people like that who are so intensely into their work, I imagine they're also very difficult people to live with.
Well, that's the thing about, I did want to mention that with the writing thing is that I do kind of feel like a drug addict. I often will pop up and be like, wait, was I supposed to do something? And like, and there's this guilt like of neglect, you know, like I'm neglecting the one I love. And occasionally Grace will come out and be angry. And I'm like, right. Things I got to do. Okay. Food. Right. You want to eat. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hard. It's hard to balance flow and relationships, probably.
But who needs him at that point? You're just caught up in your own thing.
I also wonder if it's more difficult when you get older, because I feel like when I was younger, it was very easy for me to just get completely consumed by writing. Now I feel like...
That's kind of what that chart is sort of saying. Like, I think it's because our skill level was so low that the difficult, you know, no matter how difficult it was easy to achieve that flow. Or, you know, if it was low difficulty, right, you could achieve it. I feel like that's what drugs do too. Like, they make you stupider so that you could do simple things and achieve flow.
Right.
Because, more easily, because you're just, you know, like, yeah, counting the fingers on your hand seems like pretty hard, but not that hard. Right. Brings you to that place.
Yeah.
Well, so, I do wish I could find that more frequently, because I think, you know, it's one of those things when you leave that space, you're like, wow, I actually got something done. Or you really feel like you were using, you know, you were productive and, you know, cutting through things kind of efficiently. And most of my existence feels so inefficient at this point.
Yeah. Right. And you kind of feel you feel sort of like this productive machine. Like you've mastered your mind and your body to this point where you're able to just channel it into the production of something or other. It feels like a good accomplishment.
Mm. I like feeling like a machine.
So what did you guys want to talk about?
Well, my thing it's sort of about what makes us human. It's about beauty, the dark side of the cosmetic industry. It's also about a madman genius named Joe Rosen. I read this article in Harper's Magazine. This is like 15 years ago now. This is where my article came out. And it caught my imagination. And I've actually read it many times and used it as a teaching tool. I've been obsessed with this guy. I actually wanted to interview him for our show. I never did get around. He lives in New Hampshire. He's but he seems like a regular kook. He's all about sort of like functional plastic surgery. So, for example, turning your pinky finger into a second thumb was one of his ideas. Also, having a skin flap that goes from your wrist to your ankle, so we could be like flying squirrels, was another one. Like, he's obsessed with functional plastic surgery as one of his things. And he's also obsessed with sort of alternative ideas of beauty. I have a selection from the article that I would like to read to begin. Is that all right?
Yeah, please.
Okay. Before me is a man with a face beyond description. Sweeney, Rosen says, has cancer of the face. It ate through his face, so he scraped off what was left, took off his tummy fat, and made a new face for him out of the stomach. Sweeney, you look good, Rosen says. Sweeney is...
You sound like those old newsreels.
Well, I've read this several,
listen,
many times.
See?
Guys, come on. Let me get... You gotta... Trust me.
Oh, stomach face.
The Allies have stormed Normandy.
Sweeney, his new face or his old stomach oozing and swollen from his recent radical surgery, nods. He looks miserable. The belly face sags. What about my nose? Sweeney says, and then I notice Sweeney has no nose. The cancer ate that along with the cheeks, etc. This is just awful. That comes next. We'll use what's left of your forehead. A minute later, Rosen turns to me and observes that pretty soon women will be able to use their buttocks for breast implants. Where there's fat, Rosen says, there are possibilities. Maybe I'll just stop there. I love that quote. Where there's fat, there are possibilities. So he has a lot of crazy ideas. I mentioned the thing with the thumb. The wings are also something that... And I'm like, of course you could easily make that skin flap. I mean, not easily, but it's no muscle involved. You could just make the flap. So the question I always ask is, where do we start? Well, the other thing that really I found interesting was the person who wrote this article was on... you know, some sort of thing like Prozac. And Rosen was saying, you know, we mess with our minds all the time. What's the big deal with our bodies? And he has a point. Like, we freak out about seeing skin flaps, but we're willing to take these mind altering drugs that, like, you know. So is Rosen ridiculous? A madman? A monster? You know, like, I mean, where does it go? Like, if we could one of the things people ask him is, if you could turn someone into a pig, would you do it? Is that okay? Like a pig body, but I've still got my mind. Like, I just always thought of myself as a pig, you know? Is that okay? Like, these kinds of questions.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I'm fine with it. You can do whatever you want with your body.
Just stay away from hog farms. If you're like the pig person.
Yeah.
You'll be turned into bacon and your hooves will be harvested.
But yeah, I agree. It's really not... It's not that far. I mean, for me, like, seeing people with crazy plastic surgery, like movie stars and whatever, is just as disturbing to me as it would be to see someone with a pig snout instead of a regular nose.
Right. That's, you know? That's really, I mean, the thing is that we normalize this idea. Basically, he's restricted from doing a lot of these surgeries because of the Hippocratic Oath. You know, you can't do anything that could be seen as harming your patient, only fixing them. So someone had – the reason why he got the idea of having the second thumb is because he'd seen a waiter – I think it was like Vietnam or something. I forget. It's been a while since I read the article – who had two thumbs. And it was made him really much better waiter because he could easily carry things with his two thumbs. And he was like, I could take that thumb off of that guy, but I can't put a thumb on. And I was like, that's wrong. That's not fair.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that those functional changes, like the thumb thing, I understand. But I mean, there's also a lot of there are two things. First of all, since that article came out, I mean, there have been a whole bunch of actual face transplants besides the stomach man face.
Right.
Not that that changes anything. It's just sort of, you know, more extreme plastic surgery is common, although generally to help people, you know, their face was eaten by cancer or whatever else. But then there are, of course, all those people who are now, and probably were at the time of the article, into body modification.
Right.
Having little horns installed or whatever. You know, there's right. that whole thing.
Always the horn people.
The horn people. I don't know about the skin flaps. First of all, that sounds gross. And then also, I mean, some of that stuff just seems like you're doing it to prove a point, because you can get one of those squirrel suits now. You see all those daredevils in the squirrel suits. Like, why wouldn't you just put a squirrel suit on? You could take it off. Why'd you have the skin flaps? Like, no one's going to want to talk to you.
Because then you're like Batman. You're like, any second I want to, I'm just jumping off buildings. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're talking about a subculture. There's, I mean, just the idea of piercings and tattoos. It's like people want these. They want to modify their bodies permanently. So it's part of this culture of, it's not that they want to show people some cool thing. It's that they want to lie alone in their bed and look at their cool, weird attachment to their
body. Right, like webbed fingers. That was another one you talked about, like having webbed fingers.
They could swim more easily.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sure if he did or someone did offer those surgeries, I'm more than sure. I know that there would be people signing up based on all the reality TV that I've seen snippets of. People would be signing up for webbed fingers and skin flap wings. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I think there's some legal reason why I can't do it, like the Hippocratic Oath, but I'm not sure. I also, so since that article came out also, so it didn't, wasn't, weren't we just talking about not that long ago about how, isn't that they're splicing together pig and human genetic material to create pig people?
Yeah, humans. That was discussed briefly.
I remember reading that. So that's like, so in some ways it seems like this extreme plastic surgery seems like, so it's like beta. It's like not beta. What's the, there's VHS. Yeah. And beta, you know, it's like the technology that never took off that was like great, but then it was replaced by laser discs.
So Gabe, what you just made me think of, not that last part, you mentioned he lives in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And I imagine he lives in this like crazy old house with, or barn, there's like some barn in the back, and at one point the chain falls off the barn and all these like emaciated people run out with these terrible plastic surgeries he's been doing in secret because of that Hippocratic oath thing. He has to have like a horde of monsters in his backyard.
Yeah, I mean, I really did love how he really does come off as a real kook, a real madman.
Yeah, that sounds, I feel like that is the plot of some horror movie, like Basket Case.
Well, there's that centipede one where they just sew people together.
Right. Mm. Yeah, but there's one about some mad scientist kind of guy who, like, that's what he does, is does weird plastic surgeries or something. I don't know. Maybe that's the movie for you to write.
Maybe.
What would you do, Gabe? If you could do any kind of plastic surgery, what would you?
Well, yeah. I mean,
it could be something, you know, just like fixing your nose or something.
Mm.
Not that you have, there's anything wrong with your nose.
Well, yeah, what do you say about my nose? I want to turn my nose upside down. I want my nostrils going straight up.
That would suck in the rain.
I don't know. I mean, I can only think of really crazy things. Like, I would want my eyeballs in the back.
How about permanent glasses?
You mean have it sewed into your face? Permanent, have glasses like skin?
Well,
glasses?
Like made of cartilage. Yeah,
they'd be like flip ups.
Exactly. Yeah. Like instead of having your eyes fixed with LASIK, you had this nutball plastic surgeon sculpt glasses out of like cartilage and other things. That
I would like
can't
to be able to
come off.
I would like to be able to see out of other creatures' eyes, like how bugs see and how they say that other creatures can see have different primary colors than we do. Like, isn't there some creatures that have like up to 12 primary colors?
I don't know. So you want to see like crazy, some new kind of vision.
Yeah. I want a new kind of vision. I want to see in a new way, but that's not plastic surgery. That's like,
that's brain like, implants. That's a whole nother topic you can go on.
But the thing is, the other thing I find I like about this guy is the blurry area between like, okay, I'm gonna change how I look, like literally the cause, you know, my appearance to like functionality to, and then it goes into the muscle, and then it goes to the neural level. Like, where does it stop? There's a shady area between like total transformation of the mind and. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna widen my nose. I guess people don't usually widen their nose, so do they? That's not the common one.
That's not. Oh, my nose is much too narrow.
Yeah, well, I've always wanted to be more beast-like. I like big.
Yeah. What about plastic surgery? Some trend that kicks up where instead of people trying to make themselves look younger, young people try to make themselves look much, much older. A 30-year-old awesome. That looks like they're in their 60s by plastic. Oh, look at the plastic surgery they got.
I did think it'd be funny to have permanent muscle tone made out of cartilage in my body. So like it was like I had this like pecs, but it was just like this flabby, like rubbery cartilage.
It's so disgusting. That would really be gross.
Yeah. That I thought of that one.
I mean, the plastic surgeon is one of those careers. I mean, obviously, most of them are just doing the typical cosmetic stuff, but it's one of those careers where I imagine, you know, when you're driving home after work, you think about all the crazy stuff you could actually do like that. You're like, if it was only legal, I could do, you know,
right.
So flabby cartilage into Gabe's body, make him look like a deflated muscle man of the olden times.
Right. Or like sculpt someone's tongue into a little dolphin sculpture in their mouth. So it's like they've got this dolphin bouncing around inside. I mean, there's so much to do. It's just, it's crazy what you could do. The human body is endless. The possibilities really are endless.
So did that guy ever do anything? Did he ever give anyone any?
I don't remember. There was, I think there was the scaly guy, because there's a few, there's a the leopard lady, but then there's also the scale guy, might have been him.
Scale guy?
Yeah, there was a guy that wanted to look like a lizard, remember?
Oh.
He did want to be able to give people forked tongues, and I think there's been a lot of that.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that. That's disturbing. I think people do that themselves. It's like some really sick shit.
Why would you do that? See, that's the thing. Before, you were talking about all these functional improvements he thought he could make, flying and whatnot. And now you're talking about forked tongues. What is that?
Well,
why would he be interested in that?
It's the gray area. It's the gray area. And it's part of it is also into the aesthetic of the bizarre. Like, it's not just like about beauty. It's about exploring all the strange possibilities, right? Like upside down noses. I mean, I can make, you know, why not? And we could sort of like do all sorts of stuff. It's like, why has everyone got to have the button nose and the cleft chin, you know?
Yeah. It is interesting. Like how, I mean, that stuff is really only available. That kind of surgery is really only available to very wealthy people. And it's sort of an interesting social thing. Like what would happen if poor people were able to get plastic surgery?
Yeah.
You mean cosmetic style surgery? Facelifts and ass lifts. Like
I mean, imagine more of them would do it. It's weird. Like I associate it with like rich, tasteless people. Like that's what I sort of associate facelifts and that kind of stuff with.
One of the things they mention in that article is this idea of rich people turning into God people, you know, like getting wings and this idea that they would sort of think of themselves as God and take as gods and take and sort of like, and there would be this serious divide between, you know, if we could really do anything.
All right, I'll try to explain this. It's somehow rattling around my head, but so before I talk about megalomaniacs, which is part of my thing and driving progress forward, which is sort of what I told you guys I wanted to talk about.
Progress is a lie. Sorry. Yeah.
People go to college and they learn all of this science stuff or whatever they learn. And in 4 or 5 or 6 years, you've sort of absorbed at least the highlights of a whole bunch of knowledge that took, you know, generations and hundreds of years, if not more, to sort of for people to figure out. And there's so many things that before they're known or understood, and you said, well, how would you do this? And there's people don't, you know, you don't know, and then someone figures it out, and then it seems so obvious. So there's this kind of thing where there's a time where things are completely unknown, and there's no sense of how to do it. But once it's been accomplished, it actually seems like it's pretty easy, so to speak, relative to how it seemed before. And so combining that with this phenomenon that we've seen recently, I mean, what's his name? Elon Musk is the most extreme candidate and definitely the person that sparked my thought process on this. But it seems like if there weren't people like Elon Musk who declare a new crazy idea every day or couple of months, you know, there would generally be this progression of stuff and people would figure things out. But it seems that actually like big advancements that don't even seem really possible happen when there's some nutcase that just kind of demands that it's done or just says, oh yeah, we're going to do this thing. We're going to do it. We're going to send people, we're going to send space tourists to the moon in a year. We're going to build underground superhighways. We're going to make a tube that people can, you know, travel all up and down the West Coast in 10 minutes. And people are like, that's crazy. But then some of them have seemed to happen, like rocket ships that can land back on Earth. And it's not only that. I mean, I was trying to think of other examples. I mean, there are a lot of them. There are some clearly political movements of people who sort of take over and just say stuff, and somehow that becomes like this movement. But then there's also stuff, again, going to the sci-fi era, like, you know, JFK and flying to the moon. I mean, it was the late 50s. Was it the late 50s or early 60s when he said, we're going to go to the moon by the, I guess it was probably the, I'm not exactly sure when he said we were going to go to the moon, but like nobody knew how to do that. It wasn't a thing that you're like, oh yeah, we just have to do A, B, and C with barely any like actual technology and we'll get there. It's like there's just...
Why was he so obsessed with that anyway? I mean, this is a different subject, I guess, but...
I mean, the boilerplate answer is because they were... It had to do with the Cold War and the... Like everything Russians about that it, stuff right. was like beating Russia, and Russia got Sputnik up and we weren't going to let them win in space.
Right.
So we had to go to the moon, and he's like, we're going to go to the moon now. Everybody put your thinking caps on. We can do this thing, but it might not have been possible. I mean, especially considering you know, it was like AM radios and giant television sets that looked like pieces of furniture that like, you know, glowed when you turned them on, you know. And I mean, probably you could say the same thing about, you know, atomic bombs and stuff, about people just saying, we need to get this done before the Germans or whatever. But I guess what I wanted to get, you know, find out from you guys is, do you think that's true, that there's sort of this, that it's not all just like, oh, we just had this next discovery, but they're just like crazy people who insist that someone's going to write a space Bible and send it to Mars or whatever. Do you think the obsession with crazy ideas somehow drives them, like with certain people that have a level of power, can actually drive those things to happen much faster?
Yeah, for sure. I imagine there's a lot of crazy people that had crazy ideas that didn't amount to shit too. So I think it's I don't know. But it is true. Like it has to be like that perfect storm of not only being crazy and single-minded, but also having power and being fairly smart about it. You know, it has to be, I don't think there's any real advancements that have come from, you know, really stupid people, have there? I don't know.
But I mean, what I'm saying is Elon Musk or, you know, JFK or maybe even Hitler, sort of, even though that's a terrible group of people to assemble, I mean, they all not only got people to say, yeah, I'll throw in my vote, but they all were like, we need to do this thing that's crazy. And it's right. And we don't even know how, but I know we can do it.
Yeah. So what are some other examples? Before we get into what are some other examples of megalomaniacs that have sort of spawned progress?
Yeah, I mean,
there's classic geniuses, you know, there's like Freud and Marx and
but they sort of
history.
They did, but they weren't doing it through the pure conviction of their ideas. Like, I don't think...
Well, then there's like Ford with the automation.
Ford, yeah, that's a good example. Ford's a good example.
Yeah.
I think he's someone who is like, he was very methodical and obsessed with like his theories and his ideas about production and...
Yeah, to some degree.
There's also artists like the Futurists or the Dadaists. They had like really extreme, you know, ideas that seem crazy. Like a cup made it with covered in fur. That's
yeah, but they didn't succeed. Like Ford succeeded in the assembly line.
I don't know. I mean, Dadaism definitely had a lasting effect on history. You could argue that. I mean, who cares about automated automation? Yeah, but it's not just
automation. It had a small effect. Yeah,
it's not just a matter of a lasting effect. It's a matter of what I'm saying is somebody who doesn't have the skill themselves projecting such a presence that they convince people who, and nobody knows how to do the thing they're trying to convince them to do, to actually solve the problem. But no, it's not very, it's sort of like, I would say.
I wish there had been a cross between the Dadas and Ford, and we had automated furry cups.
Of course you do. But I mean, well, I think Edison might be another one. I mean, he had some skills, but it's actually, he could only go so far. He wasn't that, he had a very basic understanding of you know, science, modern technology. But he was so driven with his sort of corporate inventions that, I mean, you know, he electrified, you know, he powered the whole world basically and came up with all these things. And I'm not, you know, you can say a lot, he was a jerk or he took credit for other people's ideas. I'm not right, even talking about
Tesla,
that. But
Edison.
Yeah, but the point is, Edison was the one who was like, we're going to do this thing that's so huge and we don't even know how. I mean, for example, when they were electrifying the country, they didn't even know how to do it. And they put all this stuff in the ground that didn't work and electrocuted people and all sorts of stuff.
There are definitely people that are outside the pale. Like there was that guy with the orgone machine that was supposed to capture sexual power to like power things. I mean, you know, just because you're a megalomaniac, you don't know much, doesn't mean you're going to change the world.
No, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know.
That's what I'm saying about the sort of perfect storm. Like there, it has to really, it doesn't happen often. It seems like a pretty rare occurrence when a megalomaniac is able to change history. Seems
yeah,
like
change
like,
history.
I feel like there's a lot more megalomaniacs who aren't changing history, throughout history than.
I mean, the other way of looking at this, other than just you know trying to figure out who has achieved this, is again that sort of strange. Another way of thinking about it is the first time you hear. I don't have any really interesting examples, but you know, from a jazz perspective, like. You know, everybody's kind of doing the same thing, and then you have a piano player like Thelonious Monk, and you're like, wow, it's totally different. Or, you know, there are a lot of musical examples of things where the first time they happened, and I know it's happened in, you know, literature and writing and the arts, where the first time they're done, it's so different, and people are like, how did you get there? And I guess so part of what I'm trying to say is, we sort of, on a day-to-day basis, we learn, you know, we work at learning things in a sort of linear way, you know, we're like, oh, I'm working on this thing, I'm getting a little better. But those crazy leaps that then after they're done, they're like, oh yeah, okay, that makes total sense. You know, like, oh, anybody can now do that. You can like learn that style or learn that thing or learn how to go to Mars, you know, or learn how to build an atom bomb. But before that, that just didn't even exist. It wasn't like the next thing on the list of things to learn. It was so different. And I think a lot of times that might be done by people who are just like, oh, I'm going to do this thing. Like I don't, you know, somehow they're really driven, but it's just sort of an interesting, at least, you know, human phenomenon that we make these jumps sometimes. It seems so kind of like, where did that even come from? Mm. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah,
no, I'm ranting.
Did you guys see that? Did you see that documentary about Walt Disney that was on PBS a little while back?
No,
it's pretty good. It was interesting. I mean, he's someone who had his faults. He was like, you know, he was vehemently anti union and all this stuff, and he did all these shitty things to his employees. But he was just his whole mission of creating entertainment for children, like from the cartoons through Disney World and everything, was really like, it's just sort of common, you know, commonplace now. Every billions of dollars every year is being made off this shit for designed for children that really came from Disney. Like that really was the beginning of all of that. I mean, he changed the whole concept of children, basically, you know, like entertaining children. Like, it was really like a massive shift
before commerce. Him, like, you just gave kids, like, here's a pen knife, go whittle something. Like, that's all there was.
Right. I mean, there were kids' books and stuff and whatever, but I mean, it wasn't like kids were begging you to go and see some movie or go to Disney World or all this stuff. You know, that really was his doing.
That's another example. I guess the simple way I could put, you know, the term that covers what I'm trying to talk about. I mean, you're describing it as sort of like visionaries, you know, mm-hmm. people that are like way ahead.
I think the type of people that you're talking about are tapping into the zeitgeist, like the automation. I mean, there already was the Industrial Revolution and the similar with the film, and this films were this thing, and it's like they're tapping into something that exists to make a buck. Like they're basically entrepreneurs that can see a niche and they're going to sell to that niche.
Right. They are. But it's also, there's also like a level of, you know, a vision that goes beyond just making money or a single sort of thing. Like where Walt Disney, I guess, had this, he grew up in this very small town or lived in the small town when he was younger. And it always like, it stuck with him, this notion of Americana and small town American values. And you know, then later he created that part of Disney World that looks like a all American town. And you could see it in like a lot of his movies too, like this return to innocence kind of thing. And he was tapping into the sort of feelings that Americans were having, you know, like you were saying, like the zeitgeist.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think the concept, and I don't know if he was the start of like the giant theme park.
He was, yeah, basically.
Is a sort of visionary idea. Like, it's different than a circus or a little thing, like the giant theme park. Whoever came up with that, and maybe it was Disney.
It was Disney, and it was something that people thought was crazy, and it was everyone thought he was out of his mind for spending all this money doing it. He also was obsessed with trains. I don't want to keep going off about Disney. He was obsessed with model trains, like not little ones, but giant ones that you could sit on. Not full-size trains, but just like these sort of, you know, basically
kids
like
trains. You can sit on them and drag a bunch of kids around.
Yeah, and they ran on tracks, and he built this crazy giant train set in his estate, and it was all like he would build all the trains to match old trains. And that was crazy.
He sounds like a creepy, like Michael Jackson level creepy kind
totally.
Of guy.
Yeah, he is a total creepy Michael Jackson weirdo.
That's a whole level. I don't know if I trust that. I mean, not only, plus the symbolism, I mean, of this sort of like old world, this like Americana, like the small town, wholesome America, it's like so utilized for so much evil. I mean...
Yeah, but that's now, Gabe. I mean,
but he's responsible for it because the central, the core of his ideology is not pure.
The core of.
I mean, he's not coming from like a place of inclusiveness, like from the in his mind. He's creating this symbolism inside of his dreamscape. It allows for this kind of manipulation and use.
Yeah, yeah, and he was kind of a recluse. So yeah, I see what you're saying. Like he's. It's not like he wanted to exist in this.
Yeah, like if trans people were around in his time period, he wouldn't be like, let us all embrace. Like he would be right there with the Republicans that have embraced his ideology. That's my point.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, anyway.
He would be right there up there with Trump. He would be on Trump's board. He'd be like, yes, I agree with you. We need to make America safe again. Mickey Mouse, I'm going to make a Mickey. I don't know if you talk like that. I probably did.
Well, he did make that movie, that Song of the South movie, which was disturbing.
Yeah. About,
I don't know that.
It wasn't overtly racist, I guess.
Just one of those weird nostalgia films for a nostalgia film. Bygone time.
Yeah, yeah, it was like nostalgia for the old South and the life of a old black man in the South. Mm. Right after slavery. I don't know. It's strange. Anyway,
there you go.
Mutable.